fighting for America.
We did exactly what needed to be done in order to catch those who were guilty on 9/11 and to prevent a further attack. And we were successful on both parts.
This report says it was not successful.
The report's full of crap.
Fighting for Idaho.
The president has the legal authority now. It's exactly the same legal authority that he had 6 years ago, and he didn't do anything about it. And since then, he has deported more than 2 million immigrants.
Fighting for you.
No, Kevin, yes. I logged 35,000 miles on my Chevy pickup in the last year.
I hope it wasn't a lease.
And it wasn't. And our roads aren't bad.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Exactly. And there, I can't wear jeans. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. We'll quickly go to, hey, Tom, I got to run, but anything else you want to say real quick?
Yeah, we don't have a declaration of war. We don't have a defined enemy. The enemy always changes, and we actually fund and train the enemy. So take that and put that in the pipe and smoke it.
All right, everybody. Tom Munns, thank you very much.
Thank you, buddy. See ya.
All right, take care. Joining us now, Congressman Mike Simpson in studio. Getting ready for the Christmas spirit. How are you, sir?
I've already got the Christmas spirit.
Well, have you been naughty or nice?
I've been nice, very, very nice. I've been trying to convince my wife of that now for about a year.
I think Dr. Stallings is still looking for you.
He was nice afterwards.
He's quite the character, but there's a lot of big issues going on, none bigger than enhanced interrogation. We just had our friend Linda at the front desk correct me and people that listen to this program, they do that all the time, saying it's not torture, it's enhanced interrogation. You have Chuck Todd trying to lecture the former vice president that we prosecuted Japanese folks like the Bataan Death March. I mean, this is getting out of hand. Your thoughts?
I think it was a disaster that Chairman Feinstein released that report. There was absolutely no reason to release that report. And what it does primarily to our allies that we expect to support us in a variety of things and in a variety of ways, and now they're getting hassled by people in their countries and so forth, and you know, who's going to help the United States in the future if they're afraid this is what's going to happen? But I have some real questions about what you call torture and what you call enhanced interrogation, and to me, these guys are the worst of the worst. And the suggestion that, you know, some people say the reason that we don't torture or the reason we don't do enhanced interrogation or whatever it is because that protects our soldiers and stuff when they're captured. And that might have been true and might be true if you're in a normal sort of war. But these guys, you know, they're cutting the heads off of Americans and so forth. They don't play by Marcus of Queensberry rules or anything else. And when you need the information to protect your people, I think you get it.
You get that. We all get that. But why doesn't the press get it? And you, as someone who has been a public servant, who understands the importance of operational and national security, why would they release that report? To me, is it a bit sour grapes?
I think that... And when you look at it, it wasn't a Senate Intelligence Committee report. It was the Democrats' Senate intelligence report. That was no Republicans were involved in it. The staff of Senator Feinstein are the ones who wrote it, and they didn't even consult or talk with any of the people that did the enhanced interrogation or the CIA or anybody else. And I, you know, that to me just puts a big question mark on the validity of it and the findings in it.
Congressman Mike Simpson with us, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Your thoughts on the big spending bill that was passed as well. Everybody's a critic. You were involved in that. Your thoughts?
Well, I helped write it. I'm chairman of one of the subcommittees that was involved in the 12 subcommittees that wrote the appropriation bill. And, you know, the important thing is that for the fourth year in a row, we reduced federal spending. And that's what we've done ever since we had the majority, got the majority in 2010. And for the fourth year in a row, it's the fourth year in a row, we've reduced funding for things like the EPA. We substantially reduced funding for the IRS because of their behaviors and a few things like that. So there's a lot of good things in it. Are there some things in it that I'm not too fond of? Probably so.
Sure.
It's different than if I would have wrote the bill by myself if I'd have been king for a day. But we didn't, but that's not the case. And,
right.
And so ultimately you work with the party across the aisle. You try to come up with a bill that reflects our values, and it does in trying to reduce the deficit, and we'll continue to work on that. And next year we'll do even more. So I was glad that the debate of shutting down the government didn't occur. We should have learned about a year and a half ago, year and a quarter of ago, that that's not good policy and it doesn't work. It's not good politics either. So we got a lot of what we wanted in that bill. Did we get everything I wanted? No. But those are things we'll continue to work on.
How big of a challenge is it for you in leadership, in writing these bills, to get your message through an overly biased press? I mean, it's, you know, the government shut down. It's all the Republicans' fault. So much so, it's good politics to back off, and then you have people on the right criticizing. But, I mean, you say one thing. I mean, it's torture, it's baton death march, it's this, that, and that, as opposed to enhanced interrogation. The NSA, the IRS, everything this administration has done, they've gotten a pass. So being in the arena, what's that like for you and others to know that the press just isn't picking teams? They're on the other team.
Oh, yeah, I know. To a large degree, they are. And then we get criticized a lot of times from the right also that we're not cutting enough, or we're not doing everything we can to reverse policies of the administration. And one of the frustrating things in this debate was every Republican that I'm aware of is opposed to the president's executive order on immigration.
Right.
Whether you agree with what he did or didn't do, or that policy, almost everyone agrees that it was the wrong way to do it, and that he probably doesn't have the constitutional authority to change the law like that. Then the question comes, what do you do of it? What do you do with it? People say, well, just defund it. Well, that's a little harder to do because there's not a lot of funding in this requirement. Different than Obamacare. Obamacare has funding requirements and a few things like that. With this immigration policy, it was hard to find something that we can actually defund that would change the policy. Now, that's why we, of these 12 appropriation bills, only one of them only went till the end of February, so that when we have the majority in the Senate, then we can decide if there is a way to get at the policy that the president enacted through executive fiat.
But the issue, unfortunately, for you and others on the Hill, is that let's say someone decided, hey, we're going to take a stand, we're going to stop this. Politically, because he has the press, it plays right into his hand.
Sure
he
does.
He can be doing something that's unconstitutional, blah, 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 but people will back him, and the lack of critical thinking skills in the country is going to impact you guys for doing the right thing.
Yeah, and if we had done, as some people suggested, tried to defund the government again, like we did back
right.
in August of or October, September of 2013, if we had done that again and funded all of the government except Homeland Security and just done no funding for that, and had ultimately had the Democrats in the Senate would have never taken that up, and Republicans would have got blamed for it. That's just the reality. And the press would have said Republicans shut the government down again. And the American people would have been out there, gee, is this why we elected Republicans? So, I mean, that's the problems we face politically trying to do this. But I think we did the best we could in trying to keep the government open, reduce the funding for it, address the deficit, and also only do a short term for the Department of Homeland Security so that we can come back when we have a majority in the Senate and try and do something about the immigration policy that the president put on us.
Congressman Mike Simpson with us, taking your calls at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Let me hit you with this, a little inside politics, which we like to talk about. The new House, what will it look like? What will your position be, and how will that benefit Idaho?
Well, again, I'll be the chairman of the Interior, or excuse me, the Energy and Water Appropriation Bill, and or Energy and Water Appropriations Committee. I sit on the Interior Appropriations Committee and on the Transportation Appropriations Committee, so I'll have those roles in dealing with those committees. But I think overall the House will be more conservative than it has in the past, because we've got more, I think, 12 new Republicans. I think we're going to be up to 247 by the time this race in Arizona is called. And I don't know why it takes so long to count votes there, but
right.
But I think we'll be up to 247 Republicans. It's the largest majority we've had since the 1920s, I think somebody told me. So, but I don't think it will be. I think it will be conservative, but not the extreme conservative.
Right.
Most of the freshmen that I've met are, yes, they're conservative members of Congress. They want to address the debt and deficit. They want to address the tax code. They want to address entitlements and all of those types of things that are necessary to get done, the rules and regulations that the administration has done. And most of them know we've got to deal with immigration also. So they're willing to do it. They want to do it. But they don't have extreme positions on it. They got conservative positions. Man, I can live with that, because that's where I feel like I'm coming from.
How do you balance that, though? Because, you know, the term is grassroots, Tea Party, moderates, the big tent. We just had this big election. Controversy. There seemed to be more competitiveness, more controversy within the Republican primaries, as you well know, than anywhere else. So how do you govern?
Yeah.
You know, when people vilify the speaker.
Yeah. And that's too bad. Saw some of our own members vilifying the speaker after this this vote on the continuing resolution, or the omnibus and stuff, or cromnibus, I guess
right.
they called it. But, you know, it's the differences within the Republican Party aren't so much about what we're trying to do, it's about strategy, how to do it. And we let them try one way, which was closing down the government, and we saw Republicans' numbers go through the floor, lowest they've ever been in public polling. And we know that doesn't work. We didn't achieve what we wanted to achieve, and if we still had the government closed down for the last year, it wouldn't have worked. So it's a difference of strategy, but we shouldn't vilify each other in what we're trying to do, because we all want the same thing. We all want a better country. And we want our government in the financial house to be in order, and we want our military to be strong, and we want to address some of the problems facing us. So we can do that, and there will be differences within the Republican Party on particulars, and that's okay. And that's you know, we're not all
sure.
We're not all uniform, but we're starting to see some of those same differences occur within the Democratic Party now too. On this omnibus with Elizabeth Warren out there, it was kind of funny that Elizabeth Warren was telling the Democratic members not to vote for this, and Ted Cruz was telling the Republican members not to vote for this. It's kind of like the circles came around and met on the other end, you know,
right.
But they were for entirely different reasons.
Congressman Simpson, do we expect too much from government? You know, I can sit there and say, well, what should we do about the growing student loan problem, the debt issue? You know, have we become too dependent on government? And if so, how do we quit?
Absolutely, we've become too dependent on government. We turn to government to try to solve every problem, and a lot of problems are social problems and problems that the government's not equipped to deal with, and societal problems. And the way you have to deal with it, I think, is you don't allow everybody that has a good idea to make a law. And that's the problem today. People ask me all the time, well, what new laws have you passed? You've heard some of the national media saying this is the most unproductive Congress ever because we only
right.
passed X number of bills. Well, my idea of a really good Congress is to repeal a bunch of laws, not pass a bunch of new laws. You would think with all the laws we've got on the books that maybe we got to get along with them for a couple of years and see how they're working. And some of them ought to be repealed. But everybody that comes to Congress feels that their first goal is to pass a law.
Well, and it's interesting, as you point out, the system was not designed for that. It was really designed for Congress not to do much. And I always chuckle at the president when he's talking about immigration reform. Well, they better do something. Well, you're not the boss of Congress.
That's right. That's exactly right. And it is what Congress's role is to make sure that we have a level playing field out there in the free enterprise system, that big business doesn't control labor, and that labor doesn't control big business, but there's a level playing field out there. That's the best government can do. And so we do set up some rules on how those things operate. We can also do some things relative to protecting the environment that's common to all of us, that we all breathe the same air and drink the same water, so we all want it clean and those types of things. But I'll tell you, if you look at some of these bills that come before Congress, you got to ask yourself, why is that here? And if it's necessary for government to regulate it, why is the federal government regulating it and not the state? We have way too much power over the last 200 years that have gone from the states to the federal government, and too much power from Congress to the administrative branch of government. We're getting more and more as if we have a king.
Right.
Sort of system. And somehow Congress has got to take back that authority, which is some of the reasons I've voted against some of the bills that might be okay, but I just think Congress has given away too much authority.
More with Congressman Simpson coming up next. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. Let's get you to
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
826, Congressman Mike Simpson with us. Kevin Miller in the Morning here at 580 KIDO. Congressman, a personal question. You ever get tired of it?
You know, sometimes you get frustrated by it more than anything else. Not tired of it. What you get tired of more than anything is probably the travel back and forth. If I never see a plane again, that'll be too soon probably.
Right.
Spent a lot of time in the air. But the job itself is exciting. It's something different every day. And sometimes, you know, government's supposed to be hard. It's not supposed to be easy. And I hear people call me all the time or send me emails that, why don't you guys just do this? You know, this needs to, you know.
Yeah, Mike, why don't you just do this? I'm sure that's what they say.
I know. And it's every time you have a good idea, it doesn't mean that that you can just do it. You have to convince 218 people in the House that you're right, that have totally different ideas and philosophies. And then you got to convince 51 in the Senate.
Right.
So, I mean, it's meant to be hard. It shouldn't be easy to make laws.
Now, I have to ask you another question. You've heard of House of Cards?
Mm-hmm.
Have you watched it?
Oh, yeah.
Is that how it works there?
Not exactly. That's right. A little more extreme. I don't know of any majority whip that has killed a reporter.
Right. Maybe wanted to kill a reporter.
That's an exciting show, but I will tell you that when Kevin Spacey was getting ready for that show, he and Alec Baldwin were in my office.
Right.
And I didn't know that's what he was getting ready for, but Alec Baldwin was in the office, and he was just kind of asking some questions and stuff.
So he just showed up? And
they were there because I was chairman of the Interior Appropriations Committee, and we fund the National Endowment for the Arts.
Sure.
And so they were there lobbying for the arts and stuff. And
so wait a minute. You're sitting there, and these guys, these famous actors, are lobbying you.
Yeah, about how we can fund the arts and the importance of the arts and that kind of stuff. And Alec Baldwin was just kind of joking around and having a good time. Kevin Spacey was very serious, and he was asking questions about how Congress works and how this works and that works. And when he left, he said, well, he was getting ready to do a show that he was going to play a congressman on and stuff. So he was kind of asking some questions, you know.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that's what it was or anything. And then later on, I found out that's the show he was preparing for. And then he came back, and he spent a day with Kevin McCarthy, our majority whip,
right.
And with Steny Hoyer, the minority whip, and just learned his role.
Right.
But it's an exciting show that takes a little bit of reality that and puts that fiction with it that makes it exciting.
Right. What is it? Season 3, February 15th, I believe.
Yep.
What about the troops? You know, we talk about them during the war. Are you concerned about the drawdown in Afghanistan and a Christmas message for them?
I'm very concerned about our troops. We've been at war too long, and we need to bring this to an end. And bring them home. And obviously, we wish them the best over the Christmas holidays and be safe.
Yeah, we talk about being safe. Your take on the strategy in Afghanistan right now, the drawdown, and that now it is, but it isn't, status forces agreement, it's confusing.
My problem is I don't think this administration has a strategy in the Middle East.
Yeah.
That's why I have a problem with what they're doing with ISIL. Not that I like ISIL. I think they ought to be removed from the face of the earth. But I don't think we have a strategy to address them. How can you do a press conference, as the president did, and said they are clear and present danger to the United States, and we're gonna dismantle them and remove them, but we're not going to put any troops on the ground. How do you do that? We're just going to drop bombs on them. We're going to do drone strikes, and that's going to do it. Every military person will tell you that won't work. So I haven't heard yet from the administration what our policy is there or in Afghanistan other than to meet this artificial date that he created that we're going to be out of there by. And I think when you do that, you put our troops at risk.
Yeah.
So I'm worried, and what I've heard from military leaders for the last probably 5 or 6 years is that regardless of how we leave Afghanistan and Iraq, as we're seeing in Iraq, it's going to be a bloodbath when we leave because these tribal forces are going to take over, and you know we haven't done anything to solve that problem, and I don't know that we can. Of the differences that they've been fighting over for 2,000 years.
One problem that you and Senator Risch and Senator Crapo have been working on is trying to bring back Pastor Saeed.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be, you know, all we can do is encourage the State Department to stay active and make sure that that his name stays in the forefront so that when we have communications through back channels or however we have them with the Iranian government, that we can do all we can to bring him home. But again, that's, you know, we have Americans being held around the world for no reason at all, actually, and would certainly like to see the Reverend home.
Congressman, we appreciate it. Thank you, sir.
Good to be with you again, Kevin. Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
If I can say that.
Yeah, yes, you can hear.
Okay.
You're listening to 580 KIDO.
And back, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Divided over the CIA tactics exposed in a Senate report, the poll shows that 49% of Americans feel aggressive interrogation techniques like waterboarding are sometimes justified. 36% say they are never justified.
Meanwhile, 52% believe the release of that Senate report could pose a threat to U.S. security.
There we have it. I love how the CBS Morning News omits the fact that most Americans believe in aggressive interrogation, justifying it about 50% of the time. Joining us now, live from London, our friend Simon Owen of Fox News Radio with the latest on the fallout of that terrible shooting, that terrible terrorist attack in Australia. Simon, good morning.
Hey, Kevin, morning.
Now, we take a look at this. Was it, you know, a lone wolf, and or was it a coordinated attack? Do the officials know yet, sir?
Well, a bit of both. I mean, they're talking about this being a lone, disturbed individual, but also not part of any larger terrorist plot. And, I mean, throughout the day, it seems he was pledging allegiance to ISIS in Iraq and Syria and repeatedly saying this is ISIS attacking Australia, it's ISIS. Actually, they're saying that they may not have had much of an affiliation there, but he was a radical Muslim cleric, we know that. Kind of self-styled, he called himself that. He called himself a sheikh and basically preached fairly extreme views to anyone who would listen. It's not clear how many people did listen to him, but he was a pretty notorious figure in Australia, had a very long rap sheet, previously been convicted of sending abusive letters to the families of Australian soldiers who died while serving in Afghanistan. And he was also up on multiple sexual assault charges and one charge of being an accessory to the murder of his ex-wife. Those two cases were just going through the courts at the time of his death yesterday.
When you take a look at this, of course, if it's this guy apparently had, as you just said, a huge rap sheet. Of course, nothing indicates what he was going to do and preventing these things wherever they are, very rarely done just based on the fact that you don't know who is mentally stable and who isn't.
Yeah, although I think they probably knew quite a lot about this character and they knew he was a pretty disturbed individual. They've already admitted that this is going to be a big question for the Australian authorities going forward. Why was he out on bail when he was facing some pretty serious charges and he could have been remanded in custody? There is talk of, you know, Australia has just tightened up its, or at least shaken up its bail laws. And the Attorney General said if these laws had been enforced, then he wouldn't have been out on bail. He would, in fact, have been in custody. But actually, they've just approved these laws but haven't got them operational yet, not until next month. So he was free. And clearly now, it was a tragic miscalculation. The question is, it's all very well with the benefit of hindsight, as is often the case in this sort of situation, but really, should they have known better?
Is it too early for some of the relatives of the victims to be speaking out, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, we've had a couple of statements from the two people who were killed in this, in the nave, but they're generally along the lines of saying how fondly they remember each of the two of them, and then saying that they want to grieve in peace. So there's no word just yet. We're also not hearing too much from hostages who were inside. I'm sure that will come out in time, but right now I suppose it's the police who are trying to get the interviews done, and rather than the media.
Simon, thank you. We appreciate it, sir.
Thanks, Kevin.
580KIDO, Kevin Miller in the morning. We go back to the phones. We go to TPB with KM at 580KIDO.
Morning, Kevin. How are you?
Living the dream.
Having a lot of fun this morning, I see.
I'm just a jolly little elf.
You're stirring it up. Let me tell you, you are. You know, I just wanted to touch base. You know, this assault rifle suit, just another sideshow by a group of anger people who lost loved ones and are trying to blame somebody else other than the killer. When you take a look at just at the statistics, in 2011, 11,000 gun homicides, that's a rate of 3.6 per 100,000. Heart disease killed 180 per 100,000. I don't see anybody suing McDonald's for making people fat. When you go back to 1960, there were 77 million people, 179 million people in the United States. There were 2.31 guns for every person, and the murder rate was 5.1%. In 2012, there's 33 million people, and we have about one gun per person, and the murder rate's 4.7%. When the ban on assault weapons expired in 2004, the murder rate was 5.5. In 2012, it was 4.7. If assault weapons play such a key role in the murder rate, why does the murder rate keep declining since the expiration of the ban?
Well, and here's the skinny on this, and thanks for bringing some facts to the table here. They're certainly refreshing to get some facts. Not you don't get them from the host, but let me hit you with this. I mean, you know, and I know that the folks on the left would salivate at getting that assault weapons ban back. That's the fish that got away. And whether it's with the new Supreme Court, with the libs having a 5-4, or gosh forbid, a 6-3 majority, they would love it.
But you see what happens. It doesn't make any common sense. It's the people who kill people. It's
but
not the guns.
It's not about common sense, as you know. It's about that emotional connection. Heck, when you have Chuck Todd saying that we prosecuted the Japanese for the Bataan Death March, Chuck, are you an American?
Well,
I mean, you know this. We have this other guy comparing voter ID laws to Selma.
I think things are getting a little wacky, Kevin. We need to bring things back to home.
I don't know if there's a home to come back to.
Well, I certainly hope there is. Otherwise, what are we fighting for?
Well, and look, again, here's just another example.
The Senate report on enhanced interrogation techniques used on terror suspects post 9/11. Should people who were involved in that program face criminal charges? NBC's chief foreign affairs correspondent Andrea Mitchell has been following the story. Andrea, good morning to you.
Oh, good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Savannah. Well, early on, President Obama and his attorney general ruled out prosecutions, although they're under some pressure to change that now.
We're going to prosecute the people that have kept us safe?
You know, it brings back again something I said yesterday. How many of those people who were talking about this lost loved ones or friends in the 9/11 World Trade Center incident? You have to think about that. You know, they weren't affected, so they don't care. Those that are affected do care, and maybe interrogation is a good thing. And we are not doing anything worse than what ISIS is doing, lopping people's heads off. There's no interrogation there. They just kill you.
That's what I don't get, but I don't understand the psychology of the left that continues to give them not only the benefit of the doubt, but argues their position.
Well, they have the bully pulpit with the media, and so if they can, they will. It's very simple.
Right.
We keep allowing them to do it. So you keep your show on the air, will you, because we need you here.
And apparently, you know, you're lobbying me online about the Christmas party.
Oh, well, I always try to do that quietly.
No, no, I mean, it's out. I got Pat from Middleton. I got, let's see, Isaac Moffitt. I've got Linda, you know, berating me about the lack of planning for the company Christmas party here.
Well, I mean, you know, I was kind of hoping to get down there and gear myself up for a little bit of singing.
You're going to come out of singing retirement?
Well, yeah. You know, I've got to sing on, let's see, it's next Sunday. We've got to sing in the choir, so I've got to get ready. Here's an opportunity.
You're going to share your voice. Oh, did, you know.
Well, we can bring all the other people in.
I'd put you up against American Idol or The Voice. You're our voice.
I don't think so, Kevin. That's getting a little outlandish for me.
Well, that's the way we are here, sir.
Well, let me know what you're going to do. I'd be happy to come down and enjoy with you.
I know. Well, you know, it's a. I'm still trying to figure this out. I'm trying to get my wits about me.
And if worse comes to worse, you can always come over here. We can enjoy some of those nice cookies my wife makes.
Exactly.
You have yourself a good one, my friend. Thanks again.
Thank you. Take care.
Take care.
All right, our great friend TPB. We go to Terry in State College, Pennsylvania, with Kevin Miller at 580KIDO. Good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. How are you? Welcome back.
Well, good to be back. Good morning, sir. You're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Confusing issues here, very confusing. You know, when we look at Bushmaster, the investment group that bought Bushmaster, one of the primary investors is Al Gore. Is he going to want to lose his investments? I don't know. You know, I would like to go to the torture here for a moment. What happens if we become desensitized and torture becomes the norm? And believe me, I'd like to pull the fingernails off of every Muslim terrorist there is. What happens if torture becomes the norm and we on the right become the new enemy? You know, I heard what Tom said, and I understand what Tom said. And it's a legitimate concern. So, again, I'm just, you know, from another perspective, confusing times, not sure where to go with it all.
Well, I think you need to make a declarative statement.
Well.
I mean, you need to say whether or not you approve of the government giving the bad people a taste of their own medicine in a language that they understand, or do you want to give them Johnny Cochran?
Well, you know, if we the people can determine as collectively, you know, who are the bad guys?
I'd say ISIS, Al Qaeda, the Taliban, anybody that's cutting off the heads of Americans.
Turn me loose on them. You give me 5 minutes with any one of them. And I will torture them. I will make sure that pain is something, a whole new meaning to them, yes. But what happens when they redefine the enemy? You know, and you know where this country's headed. I don't have to tell you.
Well, that's why I had a good run.
Hey, I hope you saw Elvis. I hope that you... I'm glad you guys had a great time.
Yes, I did. I saw Elvis, yes.
Absolutely.
All right, Brother Terry.
Have a great day. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Let's get to traffic. We have
Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
When you say waterboarding is not torture, then why did we prosecute Japanese soldiers
for a lot of stuff? Not for waterboarding. They did an awful lot of other stuff. To draw some kind of moral equivalent between waterboarding, judged by our Justice Department not to be torture, and what the Japanese did with the Bataan Death March, the slaughter of thousands of Americans, with the rape of Nanking and all of the other crimes they committed, that's an outrage. It's a really cheap shot, Chuck, to even try to draw a parallel between the Japanese who were prosecuted for war crimes after World War II and what we did with waterboarding three individuals, all of whom were guilty in participating in the 9/11 attack.
God bless Dick Cheney. And folks, you know, people talk about our generation, and really this is the culmination of the left taking over education. the left taking over entertainment, the left trying to devalue talk radio. And what we're seeing is something that we have never faced. We've faced the libs. We've faced the progressives. We've faced Clinton. We've faced Obama. We've faced fellow Republicans. But what we're facing now in the American press, and a lot of people have said the local press as well, and you see that when we had the big brouhaha over gay marriage in Idaho. Not one media outlet except this program, not even the station, this program, had a view contrary to gay marriage in the Treasure Valley. Not once was anybody interviewed to protect the family. And now today we see on the national level the press comparing us to the Japanese, the press comparing America in its time of need to people that tortured and savagely killed our heroes and innocent victims. They're out of control. That's why we need you. More on that in a minute. Time for traffic. 5:41 right now in Eagle, Idaho. Kevin Miller in the morning. That's why we've got to continue to enhance our education, if you will, because it's just crazy. The media is just out of line. Look, we don't mind airing political views back and forth, but when the media takes a side and they're taking the side of ISIS, we need to call them out on it and hold them accountable, right? That's why we need you to continue to help us be with you each and every day. Good day. God bless. Keep the faith. Sure.